On numerous occasions, Bohm and I explored the ways objective scientific method may relate to meditative practice, which is, from the Buddhist point of view, equally empirical. Although the basic emphases on empiricism and reason are similar in Buddhism and science, there are profound differences concerning what constitutes empirical experience and the forms of reasoning employed by the two systems. When Buddhism speaks of empirical experience, it has a broader understanding of empiricism, which includes meditative states as well as the evidence of the senses. Because of the development of technology in the last 200 years, science has been able to extend the capacity of the senses to degrees unimaginable in earlier times. Hence, scientists can use the naked eye, admittedly with the help of powerful instruments like microscopes and telescopes, to observe both remarkably minute phenomena like cells and complex atomic structures and the vast structures of the cosmos. On the basis of the expanded horizons of the senses, science has been able to push the limits of inference further than human knowledge has ever reached. Now, in response to traces left in bubble chambers, physicists can infer the existence of the constitutive particles of atoms, including even the elements within the neutron, such as quarks and gluons. When I was a child experimenting with a telescope belonging to the 13th Dalai Lama, I had a vivid experience of the power of inference based on empirical observation. In Tibetan folklore, we speak of the rabbit on the moon. I believe the Europeans see a man instead of a rabbit. Anyway, one full moon night in autumn, when the moon was especially clear, I decided to examine the rabbit with my telescope. To my surprise, I saw what looked like shadows. I was so excited that I insisted my two tutors come and peer through the telescope. I argued that the presence of shadows on the moon was proof that the moon is lit by the sun's light, in the same way as the earth. They looked puzzled but agreed that the perception of shadows on the moon was indubitable. Later, when I saw photographs of lunar craters in a magazine, I noticed the same effect, that within the crater there was a shadow on one side but not on the other. From this, I inferred that there must be a light source casting the shadow, just as on the earth. I concluded that the sun must be the source of the light that caused the shadows on the craters of the moon. I was very excited when I discovered later that this is in fact the case. Strictly speaking, this process of reasoning is neither uniquely Buddhist nor uniquely scientific. Rather, it reflects a basic activity of the human mind, which we naturally employ on a daily basis. The formal introduction to inference as a principle of logic for young trainee monks involves the illustration of how one may infer the presence of fire from a distance by seeing a column of smoke over a mountain pass, and from fire, it would be normal in Tibet to infer human habitation. One can easily imagine a traveler, thirsty after a long day's walking, who feels the need for a cup of tea. He sees the smoke and thus infers fire and a dwelling where he can get shelter for the night. On the basis of this inference, the traveler is able to fulfill his desire to drink tea. From an observed phenomenon directly evident to the senses, one can infer what remains hidden. This form of reasoning is common to Buddhism and science.